Radio Borders Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You'll listen to the sound of universal compassion. Today's the 10th of September. We will continue listen to Tangent's previous program with the book Way of Life by Shanti Davies. Please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3 or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello and welcome once more to Dharma Radio, where we've been talking about anger and its antidote, patience. Okay, so now how do you react when someone criticizes or verbally abuses you? Normally, of course, anger arises and we react to defend ourselves and maybe attack the other person, which seems the logical thing to do. Get them before they get you. Or perhaps overwhelm them with your long vocabulary of swear words. In this series of programs, we've been following the writings of the great Indian master Shantideva, and he has a rather different way of looking at abuse and the people who abuse us. First of all, he reminds us that no matter what others say to us, their words cannot harm our mind since it is bodiless and formless. Nor can those words, whatever they are, harm our body. So, he says, why get upset? Harsh words don't even have the power to harm us in future lives, never mind this one. So why do we react so badly to them? Of course, in a worldly sense, if we are criticized, we think we will lose our reputation and generally people will scorn us. And if people scorn me, I will not be able to get the things I want. But possessions are very odd things. Isn't it true that when we decide we need a new something or the other, it can take over and occupy our minds until we actually hold it in our hands? But then what happens? At first, it seems wonderful, really intriguing and fascinating. Take a new iPhone, for instance. When we first get it, we can't stop playing with it, oohing and ahhing over its functions and doing whatever we can with it. Then, as time goes by, it kind of loses its appeal. Maybe it becomes quite mundane, and when our friend gets a brand new model, some jealousy arises in our mind. Now that beautiful iPhone is suddenly full of faults, especially compared to the latest one. All our possessions have this quality of impermanence. And Shantideva says that anyway, when we die, which is absolutely inevitable, we're going to leave all these possessions behind. We can't take the smallest thing with us. What does go with us is the karma we created in getting and enjoying them. If in the pursuit of material things we retaliate to scornful words with harm, we might get what we immediately want, but on our deathbed we're going to have to say goodbye to all our material things forever. However, on our mind will be all the imprints from the harm we gave others in getting those things, and those imprints will haunt us in our coming life or lives and bring us a lot of suffering. So we have to ask ourselves, is it worth enjoying possessions for the short time we're alive and then paying for our enjoyments with much longer periods of suffering? Maybe, as Shantideva says, thus it is better that I die today than live a long but wicked life. For even if people like me should live a long time, there will always be the suffering of death. For whether we live a long, happy life or experience just an instant's joy, when the time is up, both those periods of happiness will just be memories. So when the time of death comes, whether we die at the grand old age of 102 or die shortly after birth, it doesn't really matter. The happiness we may have experienced in either state is no more, and we only have a memory of it. So what does this say about people who spend their whole lives just collecting riches? Maybe for 100 years they eat the best food, wear clothes especially designed by them, ride in the flashiest Mercedes-Benz or even a Rolls, have mansions in several countries and hobnob with the most influential people. Yet, when death comes, all that means nothing, and they go on empty-handed and naked as the day they were born, exactly like a beggar. But you may say, it's good to collect wealth. For instance, we know that Bill Gates is just about the richest man on earth, but he's also very generous. He has donated hundreds of millions of dollars to charities and so on, and no doubt helped many people. So gathering wealth can be very beneficial. Yes, well, of course, it's good to be generous with what we have, and the more we have, the more we can give. But Shantideva points out that if while accumulating that wealth we are ruthless with others, the virtue we gather will always be very small compared to the negative karma we create by taking vengeance against those we perceive as criticizing or harming us. And so we will only reap suffering and misery. He says, and what use will be the life of one who only commits evil if for the sake of material gain he causes the merits needed for life to degenerate? And this is the point in the text we got to in our last program. And now before we continue with the following verses, let's as usual take a moment to set a good motivation for participating today. Remember, the thing that determines whether an action is positive or negative is the motivation. We can do what appears to be a very positive action, but if our motivation is selfish or harmful, that action will only result in misery. Whereas even what may seem to be a very harsh action could have positive consequences if the motivation is pure. The best motivation for an action, of course, is to become enlightened to be the greatest benefit to all beings. After all, only a Buddha has the strength of clairvoyance to see exactly what will best benefit someone else. So if we really want to help others, we must become Buddhas. Do you remember the story about the old man in the Buddha's time who wanted to become a monk? He went to many of the Buddha's followers who had clairvoyance and asked them to give him ordination. However, even Angulimala, who had the best paranormal powers of all the Buddha's disciples, said he couldn't see anything in the old man's previous lives to form the basis of merit for him to become a monk. So all the monks refused to give him ordination. The old man was very sad at this, with a sadness the Buddha duly noticed. When he asked the old man what the problem was and was told about his wish to become ordained, Shakyamuni said it was possible, as once many lifetimes in previously, when the old man had been a fly, during a rainstorm he had sat on a piece of dung that floated on the water swirling around a stupa. That, the Buddha said, was enough merit to be the basis for him to become a monk, and so he was ordained. Which just goes to show the power both of the Buddha's clairvoyance and the power of his stupa. Anyway, let us be like the Buddha, and with a mind to be of best assistance to others, set a motivation to make this radio program a cause for our and others' enlightenment. Thank you. Now, the sixth chapter of A Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life is on patience, and that is what we are following here. We encounter so much anger and aggression in the world that it is extremely valuable to have techniques to deal constructively with the anger that arises in our own minds, as well as to develop the antidote to anger, patience, the mind that remains calm and undisturbed in the face of adversity. That mind is like armor, because if it is very strong in our minds, nobody will be able to dominate or harm us. Even if people set out to disturb our practice by deliberately harming us, they will be unsuccessful if we have a very strong patience. Now, the last verse we discussed countered the argument that it is okay to retaliate with anger to those preventing us from getting wealth, because with that wealth we can help many others. Shantideva pointed out that the karma collected by retaliating will far outweigh the merit of the help given, and then goes on in the next verse to answer another objection to not hitting back when verbally abused. The verse says, "Surely I should be angry with those who say unpleasant things that weaken other beings' confidence in me. But in the same way, why am I not angry with people who say unpleasant things about others?" Now, I'm not quite sure of the translation for this verse. Various translations seem to suggest different interpretations. For instance, the Padmakara translation reads, "If when others slander us, we claim our anger is because they harm themselves, how is it we do not resent their slander when it's aimed at someone else?" This translation seems to imply that we claim it's okay to get angry because those slandering us are harming themselves, while according to the first translation, His Holiness the Dalai Lama says that we claim it's okay to get angry because their slander weakens others' confidence in me. However, whichever we look at it, we are justifying our anger when someone is slandering us. And in the last two lines of the verse, Shantideva is just as quick to point out the fallacy in this reasoning. He says, if it is the cause that we are angry because we are concerned that our slanderer is harming themselves or lessening others' confidence in us, why are we not angry when the slanderer badmouths others, which harms them or lessens people's confidence in them? Why do we only get angry when they badmouth us and not others? If I can patiently accept this lack of confidence because it is related to someone else, then why am I not patient with unpleasant words about myself, since they are related to the arisal of disturbing conceptions? Hey, hold on a minute, we might reply. Of course I'm not going to get angry when someone slanders others. It's got nothing to do with me. It is due to other factors. Then why do you get angry with a person who is slandering you? Shantideva replies. After all, he or she is also under the influence of other factors, namely the emotion that is making the person act the way they are. So if we are going to get angry, we should at least be angry with the afflictive emotion and not the people under its sway. In her commentary on these two verses, Pema Chodron has this to say. We could always use Dharma logic to justify our anger. Mary is harming herself. When she slanders me, look at the painful consequences she creates for herself. Such an argument might make us feel quite virtuous. But Shantideva replies, in that case, why don't I see you getting angry about Mary's bad karma when she is slandering others? We might then claim that our not getting upset with Mary's antipathy towards someone else is due to other factors. For example, we think that the other person deserved to be told off. We say to ourselves, he's so consumed by emotion that Mary needed to point that out. To this, Shantideva is quick to reply, well then, since you also seem to be consumed by emotion, wouldn't Mary have every right to disapprove of you? I sense he's having a fun here with his logic and reasoning, says Pema Chodron. In any case, in the next verse, he goes on to point out why we shouldn't even get angry when anything we value is harmed. Should others talk badly of or even destroy holy images, reliquies, and the sacred Dharma, it is improper for me to resent it, for the Buddhas can never be injured. Remember how the Muslim Taliban destroyed the Bamiyan Buddha statues in Afghanistan in March 2001. It was interesting that at the time, one of the chief Muslim clerics said that the statues had been destroyed because a Swiss man had offered to restore them, the statues having been eroded by the weather. Because the man had not offered to feed the hungry children of Afghanistan instead, the clerics decided the statues had to be destroyed. Such logic is beyond comprehension. But anyway, how do you think Buddhists should have reacted to the destruction of the statues? Of course, if it had been a great mosque destroyed by Buddhists or Christians, the Islamists would have declared a jihad and gone on a rampage of vengeful killing and destruction. But Buddhists have a different way of dealing with this kind of harm. As Shantideva points out, even though statues, stupas, and the holy Dharma itself might be our most sacred and valuable objects, we should not get angry with people who show no respect and destroy them. Why should we get angry when even the Buddha themselves would not be touched by such foolish actions? We are now in the time of the 5 degenerations, which even the Buddha predicted. These are the degenerations of the times, meaning the outer events of the world, such as wars and social unrest, are becoming worse. Degeneration of beings, meaning people's minds are becoming more and more coarse and rough. Degeneration of length of life, which is generally becoming shorter. Degeneration in the increase in the emotional afflictions of beings, causing instability in their minds. And degeneration of view, meaning in general, people's understanding of reality is receding further and further from the actual truth. So, if everything is degenerating like this, how can we not expect others to react badly towards the Dharma, the images, and so on? Although we hold the images and the Dharma very closely, when others destroy them or criticize the teachings, it's not suitable to become angry, because, as we said, the Buddhas and great beings are not harmed, but also through negative karma, the offenders are just creating a great deal of suffering for themselves in the future. So instead of getting angry, it's better to feel some compassion for such people. Actually, I have heard that even if someone were to look on a Buddha statue with an angry mind, it will be a cause for their enlightenment. Just compare the power of that to the childishness of someone who cannot stand to even have the slightest criticism leveled against them without going on a killing spree. Shantideva then addresses the anger that arises when people close to us are threatened. I should prevent anger arising towards those who injure my spiritual masters, relatives, and friends. Instead, I should see, as in the manner shown before, that such things arise from conditions. Now, those of you who were with the program when we were going through the early verses may remember a whole section of Shantideva's writings proved that nothing is independent. Nothing exists from its own side as it appears. Everything is a dependent arising. In other words, everything depends on something else, which in turn depends on something else, which in turn depends on something else, and so on. He returns to this theme in this verse, showing how even if our teachers and family members most dear to us are attacked, we should curb our anger. His Holiness the Dalai Lama, in his commentary on this text, says that those dear to us who are harmed are partly to blame for what happens through having accumulated negative karma in the first place. Each situation depends on many forces, so we cannot just react to a situation based on what our eyes and ears tell us. His Holiness also uses the example of those dear to us behaving badly and incensing others. If that is so, how can we expect them not to reap some vengeance for their actions? So here again, it is better to practice patience and take the whole situation into consideration before rushing off to defend those we love. And Pema Chodron points out that getting angry with someone who slanders our teacher is exactly what our teacher would not want. As for harm to our relatives, she writes, if our loved one is being scorned, once again, we could reflect that just like us, the aggressors are victims of their afflictive emotions or clashes. If we become outraged, we become like mirror images of our foes. They, however, have no instructions for working with their emotions. Knowing that even with these instructions, we still have difficulties, we might become more open-minded towards our adversaries and let this insight curb our wrath. Since embodied creatures are injured by both animate beings and inanimate objects, why only bear malice to the animate? It follows that I should patiently accept all harm, says Shantideva. And he indicates that it's unreasonable to be angry with animate objects. If we think about what harms us, we can see both inanimate and animate objects cause us problems. However, unless we are a little bit crazy, we don't usually get angry with inanimate objects. Well, okay, some people do get mad at things like doors and washing machines, But actually, that doesn't fix anything and just causes a lot of unhappiness. People with more intelligence tend not to get angry with such objects, knowing that it's in the nature of things to go wrong. However, when we think something has control over its destiny, like another person, it's a different story. Then, if they harm us in some way, we're quick to develop a lot of anger and lash out. But that doesn't make sense. If we don't get uptight with inanimate things, why should we do so with animate things? You might well say, inanimate things have no intention to cause me harm, but animate objects do. But Shantideva counters that argument with a point that beings only harm us because they are under afflictions, such as ignorance, not because they have a real mind to harm us. If we then return their harm under the same influence of ignorance, who is more to blame? It's the same argument Pema Chodron used. If we get angry with others' harm, our mind becomes the mirror image of theirs. Says Shantideva, should one person ignorantly do wrong and another ignorantly become angry with them, who would be at fault and who would be without fault? The law of cause and effect says that whatever action we create will reap its own comeback in the future. That comeback will be in the nature of the original action. So, if the original action brought about suffering, the payback will be future suffering. Now, if someone does something to harm us out of ignorance of the law of cause and effect, and then we develop anger and retaliate out of ignorance, we have a symmetrical situation, and it's difficult to say who is more to blame. And, of course, as we've seen before, that kind of action and retaliation just leads to a vicious cycle of anger begetting anger. Think of the warring peoples of the Middle East, the Israelis and Palestinians, the Sunnis and the Shiites. Eventually, the violence becomes so endemic in a situation, it becomes very difficult to tell where the thing started and who was originally at fault. And anyway, if someone harms us, we cannot ourselves escape blame. Shantideva tells us, why did I previously commit those actions because of which others now cause me harm? Since everything is related to my actions, why should I bear malice towards these enemies? One might say, but I didn't do anything. I was just minding my own business when this other person just came up and harmed me. We're not in the same situation at all. I have a right to be angry. But then Shantideva answers saying, actually, if we were able to see further, we would see that we are not so innocent. We created the karma for this to happen to us. If we had not harmed someone else in the past, this harm would not have happened to us at all. Everything we experience arises out of karma, but this is very difficult to realize. Some things the Buddha explained are quite obvious according to our experience. It's not too difficult to see that our existence is in the nature of suffering and dissatisfaction. Even what we call happiness is contaminated, because if we have it continuously, the worse it gets. If it was real happiness, it would get better and better. But it doesn't. Think about a good meal. At first, it's very delicious, but the more we eat, the less satisfying it becomes, until we reach a stage where we can no longer even look at the food we thought was so good previously. And all our pleasures are like that. It doesn't take rocket science to realize it. However, it's much more difficult to realize an action in this life could have major repercussions in our next life, or how the suffering we are experiencing in this life came from our negative actions in a previous existence. One of his disciples once said to the Buddha that he thought he'd worked out how karma worked. The Buddha said to him, "Don't say that. Only a Buddha can see the exact workings of karma." So karma is a very hidden phenomenon, and we can only really approach it through the Buddha's other teachings, like those on suffering. If we can see that these and other teachings more obvious to our experience are true, then we can accept what the Buddha said about karma. And if we accept that, then it becomes much easier to deal with the harm that comes our way by remembering that the reason we are experiencing suffering is because we harmed others in the past. And we can actually be thankful because this harm is exhausting our negative karma. As we said in the last program, we can look upon the person harming us as a good friend, helping us to practice patience and freeing us from negative karma. But if we react with anger, we will just continue the spiral of negative karma in the same way as the Israelis and Palestinians are doing. In the next two verses, Shantideva likens our attachment to straw and other flammable things, and anger to fire. He says, "For when a building is ablaze and flames leap out from house to house, the wise course is to take and fling away the straw and anything that spreads the fire. In fear that merit might be all consumed, we should at once cast far away our mind's attachments, tender for the fiery flames of hate." Behind all our hate and anger, we will find attachment. From the little boy who screams because his sister is playing with his favorite toy, to President Bush taking warlike action against those he calls the axis of evil, the underlying cause is attachment to my possessions, my point of view, my friends. And the more we allow ourselves to get gripped by attachment, the worse our anger and hatred will be, and the more we will destroy our positive potential. As you know, constant arisal of negative emotions weakens the positive, and vice versa. So if we act with strong hatred based on powerful attachment, we inevitably ruin the positive potential we have previously accumulated. Shantideva advises us here to free ourselves from such attachments, as we would cast away everything that was flammable when a house was on fire and all the other houses in the neighborhood were threatened. When our friends or possessions come under threat, he says, we should not let the situation get out of hand by acting with hatred and anger, which will not cure the problem, but only make it much worse. In his commentary, His Holiness the Dalai Lama has this to say about anger and attachment. The difference between hatred and attachment is that hatred, when it arises, is very destructive, very rough. It immediately has a very disturbing quality. This is not so much the case with attachment, which has more gentleness. However, attachment also is at the root of hatred, so in order to totally eliminate hatred, one must also deal with attachment. Then he goes on to say, it's also very clear that many of the conflicts and arguments that one finds, even within the family, are very much based on strong attachment. So we find that there are different types of attachment in relation to different objects. Attachment towards form, appearance, sound, smell, tactile sensations, and so on. All of these individually are powerful enough to cause a lot of problems and difficulties. However, the strongest form of attachment seems to be sexual attachment. Where the scripture describes this particular type of attachment, we find attachment towards all the five senses involved. Therefore, it is all the more powerful and has this potential for problems and destructions. This is particularly true when a relationship is formed on the basis of sexual attachment. His Holiness says, this type of relationship is extremely unreliable, and we have the evidence of all the gossip columns and women's magazines to show us that when people get together based on sexual attraction, the relationship quite soon ends in a great deal of mudslinging and hatred. And on that note, we've run out of time. Thank you for joining us today. Before we sign off, please dedicate any positive energy we've accumulated from this program to gaining enlightenment to benefit all sentient beings. Thank you, and please join us again next week at the same time. Goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering.